Louise. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is the Jazz Call on the 26th of August. And on the line, we have Rafik Damak, Carlton Samuels, Tijani Benjamin, Avery Doria, Olivier Crépin-Leblon, and Alan Greenberg. And for staff, we have Kurt Pritz, Dan Halloran, Seth Green, Carla Valente, Rob Hogarth, Wendy Prophet, and myself, Glenn de Saint-Géry. We have apologies today from Alex Kukura, Cheryl Langdonor, Sintra Sukanan, Bodwan Shombi, John Raman Khan, and Dev Anantiluksing. Have I missed anybody on the call or any apologies? If not, thank you, Carlton. And just before I hand it over to you, would you please remember to say your name before speaking for the transcription purposes? Thank you very much, Carlton. Over to you. Sorry, Evan Labovich has just joined the call right now.
Wonderful. Thank you, Glenn. Thank you for setting up everybody. Welcome to this Jazz Call. We are turning away. We are almost in the end zone here. And we are today going to review the portion of the draft report, Funds and Foundation, and that is on pages 8 through 15 of the last version of the draft report. That version is on the wiki landing page for the Jazz Work Group. It is also reproduced here in the notes section of the Adobe Connect room. You will see it on the notes 10, beginning in notes 10 pod, and then continuing on notes 12, that is in the middle section, top middle portion of the Adobe Connect page, and then on the far right section of the Adobe Connect page. It's quite long, and we have a little ways to go. Avery, I want to record that Avery took the lead in this area, and Avery's on here with us today, so that's a good thing. It is an extensive piece of work, and I want to publicly thank Avery for coming and chipping in on this one. She's done wonders with this, getting it this far. The one small piece of housekeeping, the call we use for the small group, the drafting call after this, we will continue on this service. We will not go off. We will continue on this service. So when I call the regular schedule to an end, those of us who are concerned with the drafting will stay on this service, and we continue through. Okay. So here we are. Funds and Foundation. It starts at Paragraph 19. Any questions?
Carlton, this is Rob.
Yes, Rob. Go ahead, sir.
If it might be helpful, what I tried to do in this version of the draft, and I think it was preserved in the clean version of the document, was that there were some comments that a number of people contributed throughout the course of the draft, and just by way of due diligence, if we could perhaps just touch on those and resolve them, that would help us in any final drafting analysis that you all do next week.
Okay.
And so if I look at paragraph 19 and I refer back to the comments, Alain did have a comment about the term for managing any auction income, he noted, and I'll read it out because I don't think it's in the pod, this U.S.-based foundation, beyond managing auction proceeds, would also be able to receive outright donations or concessionary loans for development assistance to support approved candidates for purposes deemed charitable under 501c3 IRS rules. It wasn't clear to me whether Alan wanted to edit the document, but I did want to alert you all to that comment to see if you did want to make any changes.
Okay, I'll let Alan speak. Oh, Avery, you're on the board. I have a sense of what Alan was intended, but Avery, go ahead, please. Your lead
well,
on
no,
this.
I'll certainly defer to Alan speaking of his question. I just don't. The question I have is, why do we presume? I know ICANN is a U.S.-based 501c, et cetera.
That was a question.
Are we presuming that this foundation is? Because I didn't know why we would presume that in the first place. That may be necessary. That may be what comes out in the end based on the investigations of what is the right thing. But why, I just don't understand if we're making that presumption. I certainly wasn't making that presumption when I wrote the first draft of this thing, you know.
It actually came up for discussion, Avery, if I might.
Oh, okay. I guess I wasn't in that meeting. Apologies.
No, it actually came up for discussion, and I remember that it was said that it was a presumption was not that it was a U.S. 501c foundation, which is a part of the Internal Revenue Code that allows you to have not-for-profits and all kinds of tax agreements
right
there. So I've raised a question and a comment. I see Andrew is on the board. He has his hand up. Andrew, you have the floor, sir.
Thanks. Andrew Max for the transcript. I hate to do it so early in the morning, but I think I agree with Avery. That's a joke. Okay, good. Stay with me, guys. I don't think we need to presuppose the domicile. I am guessing that because of where, if we're going to connect this to ICANN, that we will want at least a 501c3 or equivalent set up in under United States law, but that would not necessarily preclude us from having a separate 501c3 equivalent set up in some other jurisdiction that could be connected to this process. In fact, we may end up with two or three different versions of the same thing so as to be able to take the maximum advantage from donors in different places in the world. That's probably what will end up happening, is my guess.
Thank you, Andrew. Alan, your hand is up, sir. You have the floor.
Yeah, thank you. I don't have the words in front of me from Alan's comment that Rob read out, but isn't the solution, he's really proposing that we accept donations or that the foundation allow donations and then giving the rationale for why they're allowed. So all we need to say is, you know, we recommend that donations be allowed if they're allowed under the appropriate laws of where the foundation is domiciled or something like that. We don't need to, you know, quote the tax law.
Okay. So we
put a footnote in and say it is allowed under U.S. law and give the reference, but I don't think we need to spend a lot of time talking about this. He's introducing the concept, not the rationale for why it's allowed. Thank you. I'm done.
Thank you, Alan. Any other comment on this? Okay. Rob, can you call out the next one that is that requires clarification, sir? Oh, Olivier, you have your hand up, sir.
Thanks very much, Carlton. Olivier Crépin-Leblanc for the transcript record. I just have a question, actually. Would there be any barrier to ICANN setting up foundation outside of the U.S.? Is there any actual barrier to that happening?
I personally doubt that because they have offices in different parts of the world. It might be, as Andrew said, might be useful to do things around the world that are advantageous to the persons who might want to contribute. I don't know for sure, but I doubt it. But Avery, you have your hand up.
Yeah, thank you. So, two things. So first, I just wanted to clarify what was going in there, and I know that Rob probably already. So in other words, this is adding the for managing any auction income and for fundraising or accepting donations, et cetera. So you're adding a clause like that in there was the result of the previous one, which I think is fine. My mind isn't quite working quickly this morning.
No, that's fine, Avery. That's exactly right. At 19,
okay.
you would add a clause or a phrase that says that at the business of auction income
okay.
and so on.
The other thing, I think the answer to Olivier's question is one of the reasons why understanding the conditions under which such a foundation could be created by a California 501c, et cetera, is listed as one of the first activities, because there's been so many questions and a bit of hand-waving about what can and can't happen according to California law by an existing 501c, that figure out what is legal. And a couple times I asked people, companies with lawyers, to look into it, they first said yes, and then they said, oh, complicated, and, you know, never did it. So that's why that's in there, because I don't think any of us really know what is allowed and what isn't. So, thanks.
Thank you. Rafiq, your hand is up. You have the floor, sir. And I see Daniel had his hand up. He took it down. I hope you took it down for you. Go ahead, Rafiq.
Hello. So just a question. Okay, I understand that there was this idea about, maybe I am mistaken from what Avery said, that to this to be under the California 501c corporation, something. It can be maybe a little bit politically sensitive to propose that it's U.S.-based foundation. But anyway, it's not a real big issue for me. So just maybe if we can propose that it can be in other places. So just to not, because it sounds like we want to push the board to choose for a specific place. But anyway, maybe my question is more ahead, and I'm not sure if it's still related to what we are discussing, but. Okay, we asked existing funds and foundation, but
yes.
This foundation, after assisting and supporting applicants from developing countries and those needy applicants, which will be its tasks and its scope later? So, because we are discussing now about the new GTLD program and supporting applicants, but after that, supporting for a period of time. I'm not sure how many rounds will be in this new GTLD program, what this foundation will do. So are we going to suggest something, or just we say that we recommend this foundation to be for a fixed period of time for this specific scope to support a new application with several sources of funding. Thanks.
Thank you, Rafiq. It's a good question. Just to echo what Rafiq has said, we quite understand that we will not make a reference, I don't think, and Avery has pointed out, to a U.S.-based foundation, except to say that we think there's a foundation and it could be set up whatever law. Dan is writing there in the chat, and we take note of what he's saying. Rafiq has asked a question, and I don't think it's actually referenced here, about what do we do with a foundation after it's done its work. Do we need to put it somewhere in this report some mention of the fact that it's a winding down operation for the foundation? I see three hands on the board, Avery, Alan, and Andrew. Avery, you're first on the line.
Okay, yeah, thanks. one of the reasons that this wasn't specified is because within the ICANN community, there are lots of possible reasons for a foundation, for auction monies, for whatever, other than just the jazz. So I think we're recommending that such a group be created. I always thought it could be something that was ongoing, but that is really up to this committee that the board puts together to produce the foundation. And what we're suggesting is that its first task is to help jazz applicants and such. But really what this proposal is saying is the board's got to get the community together to figure out how they want to handle this money and such. But I think the notion is that it's ongoing and that with the great deals of money that will be rolling into ICANN's coffers over the next decade, that it's an ongoing thing. Thanks.
Thank you, Avery. It's Alan next.
Yeah, thank you. Every captured, General. There's no shortage of things that we could do if we had windfall profits from something or other that we don't believe should be simply rolled into ICANN operating funds. And, this is the we're recommending the creation of a foundation or something because we need it now for one application. I would certainly assume it's not the only one and may not ultimately be the most important one. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. So noted. Yes. And Andrew, you have the floor, sir.
I guess taking the point I was going to make, I don't think we need to make that determination now. That should be based on what the needs are and also what the community feels the long-term life of the foundation, of a foundation, needs to be. So I'm agreeing with the others.
Okay. Thank you. So can we move on? Rob, is there anything else that you would like to have further and better particulars?
Thank you, Carlson. This is Rob. Alain B. had another question, and it wasn't clear to me. It's in the next paragraph, paragraph 20, which is really just a quote from the final applicant guidebook. But he flagged the wording in the fifth line there, an ICANN-administered/community-based fund for specific projects. And maybe you all just addressed this, but Alan B. asks, is that different or the same as the ICANN-originated foundation referred to in the previous paragraph? I find this confusing. What does community-based fund mean? It may be confused with a community foundation? Question mark.
There's Avery. There's Andrew and there's Avery. Andrew, you have the floor.
Sorry, my hand should have been taken down.
Oh, all right. So it's Avery. Avery, you're on.
Sorry, I was still mute. I think that what was trying to be said here was that we're doing this in response to 20, in response to what's in the final application guidebook or the final but one application guidebook, and that this is a response to that. So that's the language that the staff/board have in the final, in the guidebook currently, and what we're trying to do is respond to that. Part of the reason why we're looking at a foundation, working with staff, having a board committee, and having the whole community as part of putting this together is in response to that sentence and that line. So I don't think we should change the quote to be less confusing since we're quoting.
Yes.
Thank you.
Rob, you have your hand up?
Yes, sir. Given Avery's comment, what I propose to do then, because others who may be reading this fresh could be confused, is I'd propose I'll just put paragraph 20 into a footnote.
Footnote, right.
This paragraph.
Thank you. Reference it as a footnote. I think that's the best way to deal with it. Is there any objection to that? No objection? Okay. Good. I think that will take care of it, because it's something that's coming over from some elsewhere, and we're just repeating it here. Might as well put the footnote and refer to it as a footnote. Rob, is there next?
Yeah, I don't want to skip too far ahead. The next comment doesn't come until paragraph 23, so I don't know if you're going paragraph by paragraph or if you want me to just jump.
Well, that was the intent, but I'm asking for people to look at it. But most of this thing here, this, except for the recommendation on 23, that number 22, 21, and 22 just essentially explain what we mean by the funding and the model that we're following.
Okay, I can move right to paragraph 23, subsection A then. It's another comment by Alan B., and his question actually refers to the previous discussion you all just had about the domicile of the foundation. So I might, and essentially what he asks is, why limit to California, and then continues to explain something there. So my thought would be, I would make a change. We'd make a slight modification to 23A, required of a California 501c corporation, and then maybe parenthetical, some reference to, or other potential domicile for creating a foundation. I just want to be careful about what we're asking ICANN staff to do. You don't want them to check every possible domicile. So I don't know if anyone has some thoughts about 23A.
We have a lot of hands up. But to me, I am reading this to mean that that reference is actually to ICANN itself. But I'll leave it to Avery, Dan is on, and then Alan.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. You just have to blame a bad writer, and it really should say available to and required of ICANN, a California 501c, or whatever the correct way of writing it, little with the little parentheses, et cetera, corporation, for creating a foundation. So that was the intent of it, is what rules bind ICANN? That's what we need to understand yet.
Yeah. I thought that was it.
Got it. Thank you. This is Ron.
Are we happy with all of the recommendations in this paragraph? Are we happy with paragraph 24? Or recommendation there? Are we happy with paragraph 25? Those are just recommendations from this group. Alan, you have your hand up, so you have the floor.
Yeah, the way 24 reads, it sounds as if the members of the ACSOs are the exclusive members of it. And I think we really want to say it should not be drawn from, but should include.
So are you suggesting we have the word drawn from and include?
No, I'm suggesting you replace drawn from to...
to include. Okay.
Clearly a board committee member is going to include board members.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I thought. Olivia, you have your hand up right after Alan, so you have the floor.
Thank you, Carlton. This is Olivier. There's a difference between include and drawn from. I think that drawn from would show a majority of those members being from those organizations, whilst include might just have one of an SO and one of an AC. And so I was going to suggest be drawn from, but not limited to, from the supporting organizations and advisory committees.
I can certainly live with that. The reality, I think, is this is probably going to be a largely board and staff group that will then go out for public comment from the various parts of the community, which include ACs and SOs.
Avery, you have an immediate reaction?
Sorry, muting just takes time, or unmuting. I think at least what I was hoping was that there would be representatives. The important word in there for me is from
all.
The ACs and supporting that this couldn't. Obviously, the board can put anyone on their committees they want, but one of the things that I was trying to put in this is that all of the ACs and SOs should have some degree of representation on this. And it doesn't matter whether it's their members or they pick the people. So the drawn from, I understand issues with that word, and because the AC or SO may propose someone who is not one of their members but is someone they trust, that wasn't my point. My point is that in the management of these funds that could be raised, and especially since you want to be able to raise them from all sectors of the community, you want all sectors of the community to be part of that. So the thing that I think is important in there is that it must include members drawn from all, and I'd almost underline all, ACs and SOs. At least that's what I would propose. Thanks.
Thank you. Evan wrote in the chat that he said he would prefer explicit mention. So I'm asking the question of Evan here. With that clarification and Rob's response, would that satisfy your explicit requirement, Evan?
Hi, Carlton. Yes, this is Evan, and my answer to that is yes.
Thank you, sir. So we're good on that. Okay. So can we turn to number 26, paragraph 26? This one was as Avery would recall, it took quite a little bit of argy-bargy about this. Do we have any objections to what is outlined here? No objection. Olivier, you have your hand up, sir.
Thank you, Carlton. Olivier, for the record. I understand that in 26, there is G, which says other sources yet to be determined. I guess other sources in with a plural here. But I just wondered whether one shouldn't also mention in the list government grants, or is this something that the working group thinks is a no-go?
I wasn't going to ask Avery to respond because that came up. Avery, go ahead, please.
It's just an example list, so if people think that that's a good thing for people to look at, I don't see any reason why not. It's not one that occurred to me as a place where we'd likely find assistance, but certainly I don't see why it can't be something they look at. Thanks.
It's just, Avery and Olivier, again, it's just that I feel that the list that is given here, and I understand it is an example, the list feels very closed ICANN source type thing. DCTLDs, GTLDs, auction proceeds. It just seems to be that we're just playing in our own backyard when really the funds for the foundation should also be coming from sources outside this backyard, in my view.
Well, that is, that
well,
is
we
what,
have external
what
funding sources
F says,
here.
Right. F says possible. I mean, it doesn't say possible. Possible is implicit, but possible external funding sources. But as I say, and for example, there you may want to add a list of examples of what are possibles. As I say, it's an example list. I think we should add anything we want them to look at. It's no biggie.
Okay. Andrew, you have the floor, sir.
I mean, generally, I agree. I think that we have had some real disagreement within our working group about the role, the appropriate role of government in all of this. And I think we've acknowledged that that's pretty tricky space because we don't really want this to be a substitute for governments doing things that they should do themselves. So a special call out for government sources, I don't know if it's necessary, but if it is, I agree with the idea of making sure that our list does not appear to be too inwardly focused. Government is the one specific group that we've had some real questions about. So I don't know if we want to make a call out for that or not.
As I remember, Andrew, we did have a lot of arguments about this, and that was one of the things that was said, which I noted in my head, that if you put it here, then you might be opening that Pandora's box. I remember that being said at one point. But I am not opposed to having, as Avery says, and I'm following Avery's lead on this, a mention delineated as government grants or intergovernmental organizations or so on, as Rafiq is pointing out in the chat. I really don't. Alan, you have the floor, sir.
Yeah, I think we're belaboring this far too much. If we want to give an example, then give it or put it in a footnote. In general, foundations don't go seeking government grants. They end up sponsoring projects in conjunction with governments, you know, but the Rockefeller Foundation doesn't go asking governments for money explicitly. But I don't think it matters a lot at this point. The focus of this whole thing is to get it looked at and discussed by the community, by the people who are empowered to do something about it. And I don't think we need to fine-tune it that much.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much, Alan, for that. So noted. Can we move quickly to 27, 28, 29? That's just verbiage. Go to 29. There's the issue there of the availability, when funds are going to be available, and there's also some fungibility issues there. Would anyone want to comment on that? Avery, you have the floor.
Yeah, we're talking about 27 at the moment, where Alan had a note. And I think, yes, it's something that is very, at least in the U.S. and some other countries, it's thank you very much for your generosity, wink, wink, we know there's a financial advantage for you. But we don't say that because we accept, contributions with good grace, but I mean, I don't think there's a real need to go with Alan, saying, well, maybe we should indicate that they get a tax advantage. And also, it really does depend who's donating. In many European countries, as far as I know, you get nothing back except a hearty thank you and an extra pillow when you're waiting for your seat to heaven because you gave donations and not a financial reward. So I think, changing that to say that we know some of you are getting financial advantage from doing this would just be sort of senseless, but thank you.
Thank you, Avery. Any other comment around that? Now, can I ask you, 29 as a really important concept. Rafiq, you have your hand up. Rafiq, go ahead.
Thank you, Charles.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you. Just maybe to add to this part of Portinto's for such generosity to say also that it's also in regard to corporate social responsibility of those maybe ICANN stakeholders, especially those registrar and registry. So, so if they have any policy regarding the corporate social responsibility, they can provide some funds to this foundation and help the new GTLD, the applicant for the new GTLD program. That's all.
Thank you, Rafik. Let me see if I've been. You keep breaking up, Rafik. Are you saying that we should make an explicit reference to corporate responsibility programs in 27? Is that what you're saying?
I guess maybe in 27 or maybe in 20 and the point 28. So just this is an a real example maybe of why those, like, let's be more, be explicit, those contracted party to provide some funding.
I see what you mean. Okay. What Rafik is saying, if you look at 27, we might give an explicit example through a line to our brethren in the registrar registry constituency by making specific reference to corporate social responsibility programs that they might have. I see Avery has an immediate response to that. Avery?
Yeah, I think that, you know, you may just want to put in a parenthetical, you know, organizational stakeholders, comma, and then, for example, contracted parties and their, you know, whatever things, if you want to put it in, or a footnote. I think there's no problem in adding an example. Oh, yeah, I support that.
Okay. Thank you, Avery. Andrew, you have the floor, sir.
I think if there's a wider group of people that stands to benefit from this new GTLD process, and I'm not sure if we want to limit our CSR call-out to just contracted parties. I mean, there are all kinds of people doing consulting and doing all kinds, you know, other things around this that are also doing pretty well with this process. Do we really want to limit our CSR call out? Why not just say to all members of the ICANN community, or to all, you know, to all people who are participating in this process, or something like that?
All right, that's so noted. I don't think I agree. Avery meant to limit it. It's just to say it's a far example. She was saying, I don't.
Fair enough. I'm mindful of the lawyers that we're hearing who are clearly, you know, they have corporate social responsibility capacity in this, based on what I've been hearing. So, just for what it's worth.
Okay, thank you. Avery, you still have your hand up, or are you passed on this?
Actually, I didn't still have my hand up, but yeah, I think if we can find a proper way of saying, and everybody who's got corporate responsibility and got rich off of names, you know, but... Yeah.
Okay. All right, great. So we're moving along. I'm looking at 29 again. There are a couple of things there that I remember from the conversations caused quite a lot of back and forth. That last sentence. Is there any reaction to it here? Did we capture the sense of the community here?
Carlton, we're talking about options, number 29?
We're talking about 29, yes.
Thank you.
Alan, you have your hand up, sir.
Yeah, in the fifth, in the towards the little past the middle of 29, it says the funding would be available to fill reserve and risk funds.
Risk funds, right?
And I would think might. We don't know the rules that may apply to whatever foundation or whatever are going to be set up. And clearly, there are certainly some rules in some under some laws that say the money can't go back to the parent corporation to pay its own bills or to build its investment reserve. So I would think there the most we can say is might.
Okay. I just say could be.
Could says it's allowed. Would be available is the same as could be used. All I'm saying is it might be. It's, again, not a big thing, and if,
yeah,
if we get the word wrong
right,
here,
I'll,
people
I'll,
are
I'll
bound
give
by
you
it.
That. Yeah. Yeah.
Remember, we're not writing the final rules here. We're writing some recommendations.
Yeah. I follow you. And I see Avery as have a thumbs up on that, too.
Hi, Carlton. This is Evan. I stepped away from the Adobe for a second.
Yes, Evan. Go ahead.
I would like to just have in the recommendation that we would like to make sure that it doesn't too quickly get subsumed back into the corporation. Donors, conceivably donors outside ICANN, are going to be giving money into this for a purpose, and I don't think it would behoove us to be in any rush for that money to go back into general coffers when it was solicited and collected for a specific purpose.
Would
so
number
I
C in 30
recommendations
we'll that recommendation? I don't. Oh, you're not there. You're not looking at it. The 30C says the work group has identified a long-term goal of ensuring that the second and further rounds will have a stable source of funding available for assisting support-approved candidates. Would that meet your approval as a way of sending the message that we don't expect the funds to be absorbed back into the foundation for what are called general purposes?
Yeah, I agree with that. I just wanted to resist any temptation to put in wording now that would deal with that. That would talk about subsuming it too quickly.
Okay. All right, sir. Thank you. Are there any other comments here? Can we move to 31 then? There was a lot of talk around this in this area, and I recall that we ended up saying definitively, look, we are enumerating some things here, but this is, we are not saying it's an exhaustive list. And that is use of funds, under use of funds. Avery?
Yeah, thanks. I think one thing that is missing from here, and I think it's a recommendation that we do want to make, and that's that we recommend that people that want to do things have the ability to put in an application. In other words, that a recommendation that these funds can be used for various purposes, and then maybe we need a sentence that recommends that this committee review applications for their use because, you know, for example, the C, overcoming technical requirement gaps, that may be, you know, a build-out proposal in an area of some sort of resource. So, the notion is not necessarily that this committee have these ideas grow out of their head, but that people could indeed put together a proposal and bring them. So, I guess that seems to be something that was forgotten in the first writing.
So you're asking for a So let me just see if I understand you here, Avery. What you're saying is that in 31, you are asking for an addition that says that there has to be a mechanism to evaluate all of
these proposals. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. And so that there's a notion that there is a proposal coming in because it seems very static that, you know, well, where do these ideas come from? Now, the the group should figure out those kinds of mechanisms, but we may want to mention that such a mechanism is reasonable. And I think we had lots of conversations before when we were talking about possible
yes.
RSP, which some people are in favor and some aren't, possible registrars in the future, some people are in favor, some are not. But the point is that those with the things where proposals would come in and they would judge them against appropriate criteria.
Yes, I recall that was a part of the whole argumentation in this area too. I actually support this recommendation from Avery. As I recall, there's a lot of talk around this, and maybe this is a good place to augment it here.
So what? Can you restate the proposal? I'm sorry, I just want to make sure I understand it.
In all
yeah,
of these
okay.
things...
Actually, good. Carlton, you do it as opposed to me. Yeah.
In all of these things, there would be... We have to say that there should be a mechanism that is in place that is able to analyze and assess proposals. It's not just anybody just put up their hand and say, yeah, think of this. There has to be some proposal, some proposal that is presented, and then there's a mechanism by which that proposal is analyzed and accepted at some point. That's what it's saying here. Any other comment? Rob, you've raised your hand, sir.
Yes, sir. What I'm hearing is one of two alternatives, either a footnote to this paragraph 31, which acknowledges that there needs to be a mechanism for receiving and evaluating these types of additional funding proposals, or potentially an additional paragraph that says the same thing. Am I accurate in that regard?
Yes, sir. I would prefer to have it as a footnote.
Okay. And it's something that's not limited, again, Rob, here, that's not limited to just the technical requirement gaps explained in C, but something that's applicable to A, B, and C.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Does anyone have any... this 32, we have the reference to RSP service. There was a lot of back and forth in this one. Do you think paragraph 32 actually connects and represents what we said here? Andrew, you have your hand up, sir.
The short answer is I'm not sure it gives us very much. We basically say that we think this is important, but at some future point that there may be the need for new funding sources for it, and that the eligibility for that funding will be determined at a later date by the SARP. Am I understanding the gist of it correctly?
Yes, you're understanding the gist of it correctly. What was recognized in this paragraph is that there was a lot of discussion on the list and on the teleconferences that says you have to create an enabling environment for these support applications to prosper, and including among them registries. Service provisioning that is part of an enabling environment. And so I think what this paragraph tried to capture is the fact that, yes, there are some other things that are going to be required to sustain applicants if they're successful, and we should make appropriate well, we should develop appropriate mechanisms and make appropriate commitments for this. That's what that is saying, and we have lots of hands on the board now. Tijani, then Alan, then Avery. Tijani, you have the floor, sir.
Vous m'entendez? You hear me?
Yes, I'm hearing you, Tijani.
Okay,
go ahead.
Very well. Okay, thank you. Paragraph 32 says that the RSP will define special eligibility criteria for this kind of support, which is not what we decided before. We said that the criteria mentioned in the paragraph of the financial need criteria are applicable to all kind of support. Thank you.
Okay, just let me get one. If you look at the last sentence there, Tijani, where it says eligibility for support of these types of mechanisms would be determined by the SAP. Is that sufficient to meet your concern, sir?
Exactly. This is this sentence that made my concern. Because normally the eligibility criteria defined before, because the SARP is are not defining criteria, they are using criteria we defined. So if you say it like this, that means that this kind of support will have special criteria, not those that we already defined.
Oh. All right. Let me see. Alan, you have the floor, sir.
Thank you. Either I'm confused or whoever drafted this paragraph is confused, because I think it's mixing two concepts completely. This whole section is talking about foundations and equivalent things, and I think the first part of this paragraph is saying if someone were to come with a proposal not to start a registry but to start a nonprofit RSP, the foundation should be interested in that.
But that's what this is saying.
Pardon me?
I think that's what this is intended to be.
That's what I'm saying. That's what the first part says, and I think that's completely reasonable. The second part is talking about the SARP, which is the group that's evaluating new GTLD applications for support, which is not connected at all with the use of the foundation sometime in the future. It may end up being connected as the foundation evolves, but right now the criteria the SARP is going to use are the ones that we were talking about for support of new GTLD applicants,
Reaching for, Alan, if I may, what I think it's reaching for is to say, in the event that the SARP would find that a candidate that they would recommend supporting needed other stuff, then they would recommend that those things can be supported through this mechanism. I think that's what it's trying to feel to say.
Okay, but again, we're talking about the SARP has a single task right now to evaluate applications and decide whether it is granting money of the money available to it for the
right.
This is talking about someone who may not want to run a GTLD at all, but wants to run a nonprofit RSP. And they're not going to be seen by the SARP as we're currently imagining it. So I think we're mixing two concepts here. Sometime in the distant future, they may merge.
Okay. Let me give Avery an opportunity. Avery, you have the floor.
Yes, thank you. I think the paragraph is even more messed up than Alan thinks it is. And I think it needs to be cut into three sections. And I wrote this in the notes. Okay. The first sentence of that is really a recommendation that almost belongs before 19, you know. But it may just not belong there at all. I think the second part, the RSP, should be an example under 31. It's just really yet another example type, so why not move it there? Mm-hmm. And I think the third thing, the mention of the SARP, it should be a conditional statement. And what it's saying, and what I'd recommend it saying, I think what the intent was, is that if someone comes for aid
and has a proposal to this body that relates to their existence as a JAZZ qualified applicant, that that application needs to be countersigned by the SARP as to their eligibility according to the rules that have been established for eligibility for being a JAZZ qualified applicant. So in other words, it's not preventing a JAZZ qualified applicant from having a really cool idea as part of their deciding to roll their own registry. So they build a proposal and they're applying as a JAZZ qualified applicant. It's the SARP that says that, yes, they are a JAZZ qualified applicant. So I think there's three things. I think that last sentence is a sentence that stands on its own somewhere. I think the RSP is an example. And I think the first part either goes before in 19 or gets dropped completely.
So can I ask the response to – thank you, Avery. Andrew, Avery just outlined it there. Would that sufficiently clarify for you this suggestion from Avery?
This is Andrew. I appreciate the effort, but I'm not sure I followed it. I get that there are multiple things that are going on in the paragraph, but especially the last part, I wasn't quite sure. I could get my head around. Can we try it again?
Avery, would you just deal with the last part especially?
Yes,
because
yes.
I think I understand it.
And I'll try it again, and then you know, you could try to counterexample. What it's saying is when it is a JAZZ qualified applicant going with a proposal to the foundation, they need to come with a permission slip from the SARF saying they are a JAZZ qualified applicant.
No.
Thanks.
Does that make sense to you, Andrew?
I think so. What I'm just trying to help me with the process of it all. They come up with a maybe this will clarify. They put together an application, right? And they say, this is what we're going to do, and here's how it's going to benefit the community or the linguistic group or whatever that we are trying to serve.
Right.
Then they come to SARP. SARP gives them the equivalent of a visa, a stamp of approval saying, we, in fact, believe that you are JAZZ qualified. Then they go to where?
Then they submit a proposal to this foundation committee and say, we want to use the money to do this. Do you think it's a good idea? We're not talking about the fee reduction or any of that. That's part of the other parcel. But they decide that they're going to roll their own registry. They have a proposal, and they ask for funding to buy the generator that will fund their RSP in this bad electricity place.
Well, I guess two things. Number one is you know, I completely get the idea that why this is important, and I don't think anybody disagrees with it. It does seem a little bit outside of our focus on new GTLD applicants per se.
I think it's part of the enabling environment that I was talking about.
No.
That's how I read it.
Nobody disagrees. I'm just saying in terms of a first order, second order. I'm wondering if this is not we're not trying to answer a question that's farther down the line than we need to at this stage.
All right, I see what you mean.
Because here's my concern. If we send this forward, no one disagrees that this is part of the enabling environment and that this is important over the medium to long term for sure. The question is only as we're trying to get this passed through. Is this an added level of complexity? Number one. Number two, does this make it appear that we're going to be needing that much more resources that are unaccounted for that we won't have? I guess my hope would be that we would make this have this feel a little bit different from the rest of the report, because the rest of the report is actually fairly concrete in terms of what we're going to do and where we're going to go for funds and how we think it's going to play itself out. And this strikes me as a couple stages down the road. So my only concern is that it will confuse our audience. That's it.
Well, Evan has a quick response to you in the chat, and he says it's completely JAZZ relevant. But I'm going to give Alan a chance. He has his hand up for a little bit. Alan, you have the floor, sir.
Yeah, thank you. I think this is an example of one of the things, and I think Avery suggested moving it there, of the kind of things a foundation might be funding because we believe this is one of the long-term ultimate goals of why we're here, is to build out infrastructure and to make sure it's available in all parts of the world. I think we're going into far more detail about talking about permission slips. If we wanted to say JAZZ-qualified applicant, say JAZZ-qualified applicant. What the form is they use to prove it is not something that we need to worry about. So I think this
I was just speaking flippantly about permission slips. I wasn't thinking we had to create a permission slip.
I understand, but I don't think we need to, yes, someone's going to have to prove the documentation that they are JAZZ-qualified, but I don't think we should be going into it at that level here. So I think this is an example, and it's an important example because we did spend a lot of time talking about it, and as Evan said, it is central to the long-term goals of what we want. So I think it should be an example of the kind of things a foundation should be funding. I don't think it needs to be any more than that, and I'm not sure it needs to be a separate.
Okay, it's a note. Can I just make a point here? It's the top of the hour. We are now into this since we started, and if you notice, we still have a little ways to go in this, and we are really time compressed here. I am going to ask your forbearance, and we can go on for a little while longer, with the objective of completing this section. Do I have your support for that?
As long as we do it quickly.
Yeah, we have to do it quick. We have to move a little bit faster through this. Tijani, you have your hand up, sir?
Yes, just to say that it's the formulation which is not good, but it is one of the more important parts of the of our mission. It's not outside of our scope. I think that we have only to say that only eligible or only qualified applicants can benefit from this mechanism. That's all.
Thank you, Tijani. I'm glad that you here, sir, because you raised the issue first, and I think we have a way of dealing with it. Alan, you want to go back again, or is it?
Yeah, no, I just disagree with what Tijani just said. If I come up and say I'm a real do-gooder and I want to set up a registry in Rwanda to serve all of Africa, but I don't have any interest in running my own GTLD, so I'm not a JAZZ-qualified applicant, I don't believe we should restrict it.
But you will not be part of our program.
No, I'm not. But this whole section is talking about what the foundation might be doing, not what the SARC is doing.
Avery, you have your hand up. Can we?
Yes. Alan, nothing meant this to be that you could only do this if you were a JAZZ-qualified applicant. What I was trying to say is that if you were applying for something under the condition of being a JAZZ-qualified applicant, that needs to be backed up. And I think it's fine to leave
Avery,
that statement
I wasn't disagreeing with you. I was commenting on what Tijani had just said.
But I said the same thing.
I think we can write the rewrite it in the way that Avery suggested.
Okay.
That meet all of these criteria. I really do believe so. I totally understand that we are not trying to limit. I don't think Avery intended to, and I can't remember any conversation that says that if you want to have a support service that was outside, you couldn't have a recommendation to a foundation for this. This is outside of the JAZZ qualification process.
Exactly.
And I don't think that anything that says that it could not be.
I said I withdrew.
Avery, you have... you're taking it down. Okay. So for the record, we are going to rework this 32 in a way that satisfies, and we're going to use Avery's framework as a basis for that. So now, can I ask you to look at the from 33 down to 35? That's one flow. And it's based on two assumptions, cash flow for application purposes and final accounting to match blunders. 34 and 35 actually explains what that is. Is there any burning disagreement with the flow or the way it is described here?
It's Alan. I'm the source of that arithmetic. I thought we decided we were going to put that in a footnote or an appendix or something, and not in the as a rationale along with Avery's slightly different formulation of how this is to be funded.
That's what I recall, sir. Would anybody object to that? That was suggested, and I think we thought it would have been the best way to do it. Rob, you've raised your hand, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you. This is Rob. Just confirming precisely what you want to move and where you all are recommending that we move it.
Alan, could you repeat what it was actually said before?
No,
Alan,
I can't be precise because I haven't had time to review this document carefully, so I don't quite know about the surrounding stuff. There was a discussion in emails and dueling comments on a previous version of the report between Avery and me on the way to demonstrate to the ICANN board that they really can do a reduction without impacting the cost recovery.
Yeah.
And I think we ultimately decided that they were close to each other, they were different twists on it, and that perhaps we want to present them both and present them as alternatives, but they don't need to be in the body. They can be referred to in the body as, you don't distract someone reading the recommendations with the detailed analysis.
This is Rob.
I'm not quite sure which paragraphs we're talking about. In
34 and 35.
I'd be delighted if Avery and Alan could perhaps look at 33, 34, 35 and make a recommendation for how to structure that offline. I think that'd be very, very helpful.
Yeah, I think 33, 34, and 35 are all my calculations. I'm not sure what happened to Avery's discussion.
Well, some of them is Avery. Avery's garbage in there.
Sorry, say that again?
Some of it is Avery's, Alan. You did make substantial changes.
As I said, I haven't read it carefully. A quick glance looks like it's primarily mine. And
I think you're very close, though.
Avery,
you have your hand up.
I'll let Avery speak for herself.
Yeah, let me, first of all, I'd actually like to go back on the notion of moving it out of the body. I think since one of the requirements from the board was give us a plausible reason for why it is we can do this, one of our requirements in our recommendations is that. What I think may be reasonable is to take these three paragraphs or multi-paragraphs and turn it into, in a sense, one single paragraph that has a chapeau sentence that says there are two different ways to look at how the monies will be, how this can be funded with, two different explanations. And then I think 34 is still very much my explanation, or largely it. And
yeah.
Then 35 through whenever, through 38, is largely Alan's explanation of it. But I think leaving in the body, but making them a one with an A and a B type of paragraph, two explanations, may be the clearest way to try and put it in footnotes and then be able to back reference them. First of all, you'd have a footnote that was more than half a page long, which starts to break other rules of things you don't do to readers. So that would be my recommendation. Thanks.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Avery. I'm thinking, especially about the length of the footnote. I think you have something there purely from readability. I think you're onto something there. But Tijani has his hand up. Tijani, you have the floor, sir.
Yes, I think it is not only three paragraphs, 33, 34, and 35. It's the whole fee reduction and self-funding requirement, 33, 34, till 39.
Well, yes, it's 36, 37, 38. They're actually referencing the first paragraph. So you're quite right, Tijani. As Avery suggests, if you look at reworking those, then you have to take all of those in consideration, because the last three really is as I read them, they're intended to be enlighteners for the ones before.
That's right.
So, Rob?
This is Rob. That's helpful guidance. If I can rely on Avery and Alan sort of offline or online with the rest of the group when you see the next version to closely look at this and contribute some heavy additional suggestions, that would be helpful. But the additional comments were great. Thank you.
I'm willing to do that. It won't be done till the weekend, but yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Alan. Avery, can you commit?
Yeah, I already had. I guess it just got swallowed. Yeah, sure.
Oh, lovely. So the framework is that we are going to frame this as an explanation to the board to look at two different ways to make what we are proposing work, and we will rewrite from 33 all the way down to 39 and ensure that they follow the flow. Thank you very much, Avery and Alan, for volunteering to work with Rob to get this sorted out. That said, can we go to number 40, paragraph 40? I doubt if there's any disagreement with this. I think it captures pretty much the sense of the working group. Andrew, you have your hand up, sir?
Yeah, maybe this is too small, but is this paragraph even necessary? Of course, external funding sources are going to use their own criteria.
Well, yes, there were lots of conversations around this that the external funding sources would have to come in and meet the criteria for organization, and there was a lot of argument about it. Why would you want them to be in your straitjacket? So,
I guess here's the only question I have, and maybe it wasn't fully addressed when we had this earlier conversation, or maybe this is, but I can see there being a situation in which there is a trust fund set up for specific spending on a particular geography, say, okay? Yeah, yeah. And so for example, a group decides that they're going to just sponsor things in a country or in a sub-region, West Africa or Tunisia, say, which is fine, but that limits the number of participants, obviously, to the groups from that specific geography. Now,
we wouldn't want to prejudice people from Tunisia or Africa getting help, because we tell them that you have to
absolutely. The only question that has come up for me in the past when dealing with these kinds of trust funds, like when I was at the World Bank, is when you have commingled funds, so that you're on the one hand, you're not keeping people for whom there is a special set aside from getting their resources. On the other hand, you're not subsidizing somebody else's, one specific priority. So, for example, if there were a fund from, call it the there's a fund from the African Development Bank that goes specifically to hire Nigerian consultants, okay? And in a case like this, if there were to be something
that was geographically specific like that, if it also required some resources from our fund, then I think that presents a stickier question. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see what you're saying, and I see the concern. But let me go to Tijani and then have Ray and Alan.
There's a way around it. I just wanted to flag it. That struck me as the more important question that we need to address.
Yeah, I have a notion about that, but let me go to Tijani, then Avery and Alan. Tijani, you have the floor, sir.
Okay, thank you. My concern is different. There is a confusion because we see it before. Here also they say that the criteria are established by the SARP. The SARP will apply the criteria, will decide or will select the eligible.
Yes.
According to the criteria that the working group set. So people who are writing have to know that the SARP doesn't establish criteria.
Okay. Thanks, Tijani. That's absolutely true. We have this sorted out. Avery, you have the floor?
Yeah. First of all, am I mute?
No, you're not.
Oh, okay, fine. thank you. I think Tijani's point is right, and I think that's just a problem of the way it's written and such. I think that it's basically the established criteria as determined was really meant to be saying there are established criteria and the SARP is doing the determining. And yes, the phrasing is awkward, but I agree completely with Tijani's point, is that there are established criteria and the SARP is doing the determination. If somebody can word that better to say that would be good. I think my other point had to do with what is actually the useful content of 40 that I think needs to be retained. Is one is that we are encouraging, just because we're encouraging and recommending this foundation, we are also, A, encouraging other funds to be established according to their own principles and requirements and goals that are totally separate from this funding effort and that do things. The one thing we do want to also recommend is that ICANN would be ready to provide those funds or those agencies or whomever says, we want to fund some of your, you know, and we'd like more information, that they provide them the information of the qualified applicants. That basically, just like they're doing a matchmaking on non-financial resources, if a bunch of these national funds and other agencies set up saying, yes, we want to help according to our criteria, however, we want to basically address our help to your qualified applicants and or a subset thereof, can you help and let us know who they are and how to contact them, that's a service. A matchmaking service ICANN would provide. Right. And that's, I think, the two contents of that paragraph that I'd like to be saved and think are actually worth having there. Thanks.
Thank you, Avery. That's how I think it was intended to read, just like you point out. I'll go to Alan. Alan, you have the floor, and then Andrew.
Yeah, I'll just reinforce what Avery just said. I think there are two important things here, and I think they're both important messages. Number one, we are recommending that other groups be encouraged to do good things in the same domain space.
Same objective,
same
yes.
Space.
Mm-hmm.
And we, of course, are not limiting them to follow our rules.
Right.
But the second sentence says two things, and Tijani's right. The sentence sounds like the SARP is determining the criteria, whereas they're actually should be determining whether the criteria are being met. And so that clause needs to be rephrased. But the second one is saying, number one, we will release information to them about what the SARP has determined. And number two, we will not help them decide whether a candidate meets their own criteria, which are not ours. And
I think that's pretty much.
So, if anything, I think this paragraph is a bit sparse and needs to be fleshed out a little bit to make it clear what we're saying. But other than that, I support that it be kept there. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. I was just about to mention that's probably what you need, and I want you to pay attention to what Rob said in the chat. It's not just about that, Rob. I think it needs augmentation here to ensure that the two principles that are being enunciated here is captured effectively, especially at the point that Tijani has pointed out. It's not that the SARP is going to determine the criteria. The SARP only makes recommendations against a criteria that is set. And if they need help, an external funding agency or another fund need help in helping some of the people to the same objective, we'll be willing to share information with them. Andrew, you have the line, sir?
Yes. Just to clarify, we've got two separate things that I'm hearing going on, okay? And I think we've addressed one of them but not the other. And that was just my concern, and it's based on a little bit of past experience in this and where it can go wrong. On the one hand, if we have an account that has a certain amount of money in it, right? And it's going to go according to the rules that we have set up and the foundation guidelines that will be developed, right? Then there is a second potential pot of funding. Now, what I'm hearing everyone say is that we want to encourage that second potential pot of funding. And we want to do everything that we can to make sure that appropriate candidates get support for that. That makes good sense. If that's a separate set of funding, it can go according to their rules, absolutely. But we've also got as an interest, I think, getting people to contribute into the foundation that's going to be set up with our group. And if that's the case, that foundation, from what I remember from our conversation, is not going to be geographically bound in the way that a specific foundation from a specific region might be. And my concern is only that we have that if there's commingling of funds, we're effectively subsidizing someone. You know, we're subsidizing an advantage from one region over another, say, which we can do if we want to, but that's not something we've talked about in the past. Does that make sense to everyone?
Tell the honest truth, I'm not seeing that at all. I'm just seeing that whosoever will may come, and if they're into the same objective and they have something to offer, and it's in our interest to share information with them, then we'll do it. That's what I think the effect of this is, Andrew. I'm not sure that it is intended to be discriminatory at all. It is intended to embrace every notion of help that might be available.
Okay. I'm sorry if I'm not explaining myself very well. If this is just about information sharing, I have no difficulty with it. I withdraw my comment. If there's the possibility that we might be, that these are people who might be contributing in, or that we might be jointly supporting candidates, then I think it becomes more complicated. That's all. And this wouldn't address some of those issues.
Okay. We need to think of a little bit about this. But Alan, you have the floor. Perhaps you have something that you can.
Thank you. I don't disagree with what Andrew was saying as principles, but I don't see how this paragraph, as we've discussed it, implies what he was worried about. Yes, the SARP may end up supporting a group that someone else supports, but we're not doing it jointly as a cooperative effort.
Yeah.
And maybe we need some caveats somewhere, but I don't think we need to specify them. I think that's standard practice to make sure people don't double dip for the same expense. So
that's how I'm reading it.
Yes, we need to worry about some of those things, but I don't think it's our job to do that at this level. We're not writing that level of detail.
So Alan, perhaps it would be something as simple as just specifying that these are separate funds outside of and not connected to the foundation.
I read that as given, but if it's not, then yes, okay.
Yeah, it says external funding agencies.
Yeah, and it's, I didn't read them as being completely separate. So that's fine. That could be my misreading too.
Okay, so maybe Andrew, what we need to do is to Rob, I know you have the capability to do this, or as you augment this paragraph, you take into account to make the give the more than the impression that this is we're talking about not our own fund that is set up in Tenderloo Icon, but external funds.
Yes, sir, will do, and I'm honored by your optimism. That was said with a smile.
I see Avery is saying it's a good idea to add a sentence of clarification. So thank you for that, Avery. As I said, Avery held the pen in this section, and as you can see, it was a lot of work and a lot of involved commentary. And this meeting here today just reinforced why this area was kept to this point, because we thought it was so important to get it right. I want to close it. It's half past the hour. We've gone longer, half an hour longer than we had intended. I think we got through it here. Thanks to everyone for showing up and keeping faith and getting this done. If you still have suggestions for rewrite and so on, it would be good for you to make the comments directly on the latest version. Rob and Seth are there on standby. We're going to talk to them right after this to ensure that they have a sense of what the expectation is. I'm going to call this part of our conference to a close. Thank you all for the work this morning, and we will see you on Tuesday. For those of you who are part of the drafting team, would you please stay on, and we will get into this after a 3-minute break. Thank you all. Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Good luck to everyone on the East Coast of the U.S. and even to my house where I'm not. Bye.
Oh, yes, Avery, yes, of course.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to be stuck in lovely San Francisco because I won't be able to get home this weekend.
Well, let's hope you don't have a shakeout there.
Exactly. So, bye-bye.
I had one of those, too. Carlton, can we get a couple more minutes of break? I'd like to join this follow-on call, but need a tiny bit of
I can give 5 minutes. I am actually due to go I am presenting at the Scientific Research Council of Jamaica's board retreat this morning, and I'm actually an hour behind schedule. So I can give 5 minutes.
Thank you. Okay.
Okay. So, Rob, 5 minutes, yeah?
So we just stay on the line. You want five minutes to start right now, or you want a five-minute break?
Five-minute break, and we are staying on this line. We're not hanging up.
Okay, definitely. Okay.
And can we stop the recording?
Yes, you can stop the recording now when we start again. Thank you, Glenn.
That won't be possible to start again if we stop it.
Oh, no. Well, we
just continue, okay.
Just
and
continue,
there'll be a silence in the recording.
Yeah. I don't think
that's
we've
right.
been recording
That's a good
them
place
the
for
past,
us to
so
notice
sure
where we
is.
Start again.
Thanks.
The silence will tell us.
Carlton?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I'm ready to go.
I mean, I have a hard stop at 11 o'clock no matter what, so...
No, we're not going to be until 11 o'clock, Andrew. I can tell you now, because I have to leave a little before that. I'm going to give Rob some time to feedback to us and what the sense of what he thinks. I think it's going beautifully. Rob understands how this thing and Seth is working very effectively together. So I don't think we'll have a lot of arguments.
Carlton, if I may, it's Seth here.
Yes, Seth.
Rob and I were actually just Skyping back and forth. And yes, I think we've, between the two of us, we've captured everything that was said on the call today. So hopefully the post-call drafting session, as you're saying, will be able to be rather short.
Yes. Thank you, Seth. Rob, you with us?
I am,
Rob,
sir.
Here. Yeah.
Oh, great. Rob wanted to a clarification and a terminology about the foundation section.
Well, not just, I mean, actually a broader question, Carlton, about the entire document. It would be very helpful to get the input from the folks on this call. And that is the use or interchangeable use of the term candidate. When I first came onto the group just about a week ago, I must confess that when I was reading through the document, I was a little confused. In one of the latest iterations of the document, I made a proposal that we make at least one adjustment to the terminology throughout the document that we use. And the one term that I'm obsessed about is this term support-approved candidate.
Yes.
That's sometimes also mixed in with support-approved participants. And please tell me if I'm touching a third rail here, but my thought was that when someone submits their request for funding, their request for support, they are at that point a support candidate
because right.
Because they aren't one yet. They haven't, nothing's been approved.
Right.
But once the SARP then acts and says, you know, we've evaluated this request. You are now approved. Go ahead and file your application with ICANN now, with our blessing and our support. You then are no longer a candidate, but you're now an applicant. And
right.
So now you're a support approved applicant.
Applicant, right.
And so I suggest a change in terminology from support approved candidate to a support approved applicant. I do that with some trepidation, though, again, not knowing what the politics of the terminology were to begin with.
Rob, quite frankly, at the time I thought we had just said yes because it didn't make sense.
Carlton, afterward, may I also tell you the basis of that, Carlton?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Oh, I thought
it's
I
Alan,
heard
I'd
someone
like
else.
In also.
Alan?
Oh, it's Alan.
No. Seth, go ahead.
It's Olivier as well.
Oh, okay. Very, very briefly then. I think my understanding and memory was that in the list of, I actually could find this list for you, the list of terminology that was put up on the AC room in actually, I believe it was the very first meeting that I joined. If I remember, the group had previously been debating this, and I believe the terms that had the largest consensus, please correct me if I'm wrong, were to separate the GTLD applicants from the support applicants, the new GTLD applicants from the support applicants, that applicant was going to be used consistently with new GTLDs. Is that correct? But candidate was then chosen as a default position to be used consistently for support in the with the terms being candidate, support approved candidate, and I believe the last one, which I think in my review of the report ended up not occurring at all, but support recipient. Yes, I think support recipient. I think that was the background of it. Am I correct about that, Carlton?
It was the background. But when we had this conversation with Rob, well, can I tell you? Alan, would you go ahead? Let me not Pride to Prejudice.
Yeah, I don't recall that conversation, so it must have been on a meeting I was at. I think Rob and now Seth have defined what the intent was. The report has been loose in use of terms. So if you are unsure in any given case whether you understand it, then ask. But I believe you are describing exactly what we have been talking about, and it needs to be tightened up so we're using terms consistently. And if they're defined terms, that they be capitalized so that the definition applies and things like that. I know I raised an issue in my first review that we were using, and in terms of setting the criteria, we're using the terms saying the candidate must, and then we were talking about the GTLD string or, you know, other things other than the candidate. There are things associated with the candidate. So, again, we need to be to tighten up the language. But I don't think there is any intent in changing the meanings here. We just have been pretty loose in how this has been written.
Tartan?
Thank you. Yes, Patrick, you go ahead. Sorry, please.
Okay, I think for the term support approved applicant, we had that discussion in the mailing list. It was some proposal from, I think, from Cullen, the mailing list, and there was some agreement on that. So I'm not sure if we want to suggest something else, so we need to get the feedback from the members of the working group. But anyway, maybe to fix those confusion, maybe we need to use more plain English, and even to go with redundancy and repetition, so to make it clear, so and to clarify in which case. So I understand the last comment from Alan that sometimes we are mixing between the process of the new GTLD and also the process for this applicant to get support. So if we need to put more clarification but more repetition, we should do that. I'm not sure that just to change the terminology, it can be helpful, because still there is some confusion, but maybe to add some repetition, even if maybe it's not the best style, but it can be helpful just for people to get the context.
Carlton?
Yes, Olivier, go ahead.
Thanks, Carlton. I think if we want to differentiate between the two, between someone in the JAS process and someone in the new GTLD application process, then, of course, one would need to use different terms for each, one being candidate, one being applicant. If, on the other hand, we consider that it doesn't matter to differentiate between them, then applicant is really the thing that, one term that defines them both. But, I mean, that's something which I thought was already decided, indeed. Thanks.
This is Rob. I'll withdraw my recommendation. We'll just make sure that it all says support approved candidate consistently, as you guys pointed out. It just
to be honest,
strange
truth, Rob, I'm telling you that I'm going ahead with the majority recommendation here, but I was always concerned about the use of the term candidate.
Okay, well, we'll keep it as SAC throughout, and just make sure that it's consistent throughout the entire document. Thank you all. I appreciate that. That took you down a lot.
Is the consensus to separate them?
I'm not hearing that at all. I think you and I are on the same page on this, Olivier.
Yeah.
But I'm not hearing that from the others. Rafiq was of the mind that we should be mindful of the process here, and we should preserve the process of consultation. So that's what I'm hearing too.
Carlton, may I just ask a question? Would people prefer thank you, Carlton. Would people prefer it, do you think, if we separated them in a different way rather than using a term that some feel is problematic, if I'm hearing correctly, candidate, then we could always consistently use along the lines that Rob is suggesting, consistently, however, use, for example, support, always have the word support before applicant, clarify, you know, distinguishing it from the new GTLD applicants, but not using the word candidate if people would prefer support applicant, you know, consistently used from the very beginning. Is that
well,
a,
this is,
that would be a preference?
It's Alan, if I could get in.
Yes, Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, if we're having this much of a substantive discussion on this, it is clear that there is the potential for confusion.
Right.
Therefore, we need to be clear. We need to use words or phrases consistently. We should capitalize and define the ones, especially if there is some possibility of confusion over them. And lastly, we should try to pick things that will make sense to people. You know, we could call a supported applicant, you know, one that the SARB has approved, a donkey, but defining a term that doesn't make sense to people doesn't help.
Situation. Well, that's my posture, Alan.
So we need to be consistent, we need to define the terms, and to the extent possible, we should pick terms that make some sense,
that aren't
subject to great misinterpretation. So
that's my posture on it.
The concept
of
using a noun with an adjective to make it clear, which I think is what Seth suggested, may be the best way to go.
Well, yes, you can use a descriptor and a qualifying descriptor, support, in front of it, or you could change the noun to something that I would prefer. But again, I am mindful of Rafik's comments that, you know, we've had substantive discussions. The list has been passed around. People have approved of it. So I would defer my own discomfort. And Olivia, I think I'm asking you to do the same.
And I absolutely agree with you. I think we're on the same page, Carlton. Thank you.
Yeah. So we would just go with the adjectival clause. Make sure it's defined, Seth.
Yeah, I understand.
You follow me, Seth? What you're proposing is a good middle ground, is what we will do.
Thank you, Colin. But let me just to clarify what you're saying. So do you think people will not mind then if, I mean, yes, using the adjective support, I understand you're saying that, but are you saying that it would be all right for us to go back to remove candidate and go back to applicant so that the phrase becomes support applicant rather than support candidate, or am I misunderstanding?
Yeah, I'm saying we just make sure it has support and we don't go back on the term. Just use it as the way the working group has actually put it through.
Hence support candidate.
Right.
Okay,
just let's leave it at that. We won't get into another argy-bargy with them. Olivier and I and Alan will just handle it.
There's no time left for them to argue over semantics if we are using terms defined and consistent. So I would say you folks do what you feel is necessary to make sure this is not going to be misunderstood.
Yeah, this is Andrew. All I care, I don't care what terms we use. They're more or less interchangeable. As long as we use them in a consistent way, that's all that matters.
Okay.
If I may just say, actually, Olivia here, we could have candidate defined. In other words, there could be candidate in quotes, and that could then mean whatever we actually mean it to be, candidate just being a word.
I'm assuming that they will define terms and capitalize them, which is the form typically used in contracts and formal documents.
Yeah, they will.
Capitalized, it is a defined term, but the definition should not be something obscure. It should be something that's intuitive also.
Yeah. Well, I was going more for the intuitive, but Seth has defined it, and we're going to run with that, Seth. So let's just run with that.
Okay, understood, Carlton. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Seth. Thank you, Rob. Is there anything else we want to talk about? I have to run, folks.
If I could just say that I will get on the topic of the translation today that was discussed in the ALAC call. I know this is a little off topic. Before doing so, I'll, of course, run it all by Rob for, you know, Rob's direction and input. I'm sure you'll have points that we should consider. And
yes, sir.
Then you'll see an email after that to Christina, okay?
Very good. Thank you.
After Rob weighs in on it. Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Rob, are we comfortable here, Rob?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Rob. Is there anything else from my colleagues that they want to put forward? Nothing else? All right, folks. Thank you very much. Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Seth. We have some work ahead of us. Thank you all for showing up on this.
I have to run.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks, Carlton. Good job.
So long.
And have a nice weekend, guys.
Thanks, Rob.
Rob.
Bye-bye. Yeah, I'll call you, Seth.
Oh, okay. Thanks a lot, Rob. Appreciate it.
And operator, thank you. Stop the recording.
Thank you, and I'll stop the recording.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye.